It's a little known fact that Cheerscast is a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Hey, I don't know, Dr. Crane. Haven't you ever thought that it's kind of tough on them doing all that counseling stuff? I mean, I was raised to believe that if you have a problem, you lock it away in a secret place. You keep it bottled up good and tight. And if it gets full in there, you just keep forcing the pain down and clamping it in.
Good advice, Willie. Tick, tick, tick.
Hello and welcome back to Cheerscast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and joining me this time is the husband and wife duo behind the Married with Content podcast. Please welcome back John and Maggie Schaefer-Hames. What's up, guys?
Hello,
Thanks Ryan.
For back.
Yes, I'm glad you didn't lose our number and we didn't forget the way over here.
Yeah, I'm surprised people still know our names, honestly. So it's nice to be recognized.
Is she that couple from Transformers Chronicles?
Maybe.
Oh, I could never forget. I had to have you back. And I'm glad you're back for this one. I brought a couple in, and this is a Valentine's Day episode. And Maggie, it's got Frasier and Lilith. In some way, at their most, Frasier and Lilith.
Yeah, quintessential so, Frasier and Lilith. Yes.
Yeah. An interesting little illustration of Sam in this episode that we'll get to by the end of it. But yeah, folks, we are talking about season 9, episode 18, Sam Time Next Year. Get it? Like same time next year. This one written by Larry Belmaggia. He was a producer on the show this season. He only wrote 2 episodes, this one and Cheers Follows Out, which was the second episode of season 9. It's directed by James Burrows, and the original air date was Thursday, February 14th, 1991. It's Valentine's Day, so this episode is all about people hooking up. It's also a sitcom, so, you know, things don't go smoothly. Once a year, for the last 20 years, Sam meets a woman named Lauren for a romantic night in a cabin in Vermont. I wonder how Diane felt about it all those years they were dating. Anyway, on his way to the annual rendezvous, Sam slips on the stairs outside Cheers and injures his back. He has Woody drive him up to the cabin and then sneak away unseen. Sam does his best to conceal his injury from Lauren, but has to come clean before her sexual agenda for the evening leaves him paralyzed. The two of them spend the entire night into the next morning talking about the inevitable tolls that time has left on their bodies as they get older. Meanwhile, back at Cheers, Frasier and Lilith bring their respective support groups of men and women incapable of interacting with the opposite sex in an attempt to get them to socialize, loosen up, and connect with each other. Their efforts fail, but at least it puts the doctors in the mood. And also, meanwhile, Rebecca is depressed that she's alone on Valentine's Day, so Cliff gives her a card to make her feel better. She repays his kindness with a kiss that leaves him catatonic. All right, big picture, what did you guys think about this one?
I actually liked this episode, and I'm the most judgmental, I think, of Cheers. Mm-hmm. I thought this one had some really good character moments. The Cliff one is my least favorite because expecting a physical favor in exchange for something is gross.
Right.
But aside from that, his reaction where he's just standing there saying thank you was kind of funny. You know, so I did appreciate that, but it is yucky. Don't give somebody a present and expect that you're going to get some sort of physical or sexual thing back.
Otherwise, your friend will steal your beer.
That's right. Yeah. Norm comes and pours his beer into his own glass. That was
brutal. Pretty good pour, too. He didn't have much of a head on the
end. Yeah, he didn't spill a whole lot either. No, that was good. Smooth.
I like this episode a lot. I have a lot of good memories with this one. My mom was a huge fan of this one in particular because she always liked to see both John Ratzenberger and Ted Danson get to do any sort of physical comedy. Mm-hmm. And they got that in spades. Well, Ted has that in spades, and right. You know, Cliff with it. Thank you. and his whole bit. You know, there's a lot of it's very well directed. There's a lot in this whole thing done with just movement, where the joke is entirely Sam moves from point A to point B in a comedic way. Audience goes nuts. You know, things like that.
It's not one of the funnier episodes, but there is a tenderness about this one, especially between Sam and the woman Lauren that we'll know in this episode, that is revealing about Sam. And I kind of wonder, like, could they have done this with the character earlier in the life of the show? Did we need to see this kind of maturity over near almost a decade of with the character? Or had we seen an episode like this earlier in the show, would that have informed the way we think of him as a lover and as a womanizer, that he has this kind of fidelity and this honors the woman in this way? Which kind of Norm actually makes a joke about that early in the episode. I really like that, when it's like, yeah, he sees this woman every year on Valentine's Day, and that's the only time they ever meet. It's like, that's Sam's version of commitment. And Norm was like, come to think of it, it's not like my version of commitment.
I would say B, with B and C would be correct if your question is there. This, I think, would not have worked unless we had the level of maturity, especially from what I remember about seeing this at the time, it did mark a bit of a turning point in the character. I mean, if I remember right, he focuses more on Rebecca for a bit, but then after that, you know, he winds up going to sex addiction therapy and things like that. But he's morphing to Coach, I would say, without the injuries. He's becoming the wise dunderhead rather, and the days of his conquests are less part of his point. Right. But a lot of that, I think, is part of, this is based on a play, at least loosely, called Same Time Next Year, written by, what's his name, the guy who made The Partridge Family, of all things.
Oh, yeah.
It was a 1975 play, Same Time Next Year, written by Bernard Slade.
Yes.
It starred Ellen Burstyn, who I think won a Tony for it. And then in 78, he adapted it to a movie with Ellen Burstyn playing the same role. And the male lead was Alan Alda from MASH.
The plot is, there's obviously different aspects and it's serious, but the culmination, the pivotal scene of the play and the two of them, their pivotal scene are the same theme. Not just the aging, which we'll talk about, but just kind of the what to build off of Sam's version of commitment. The idea is to this is Sam, a little bit more of Sam's idea of commitment. And I think it's not just the physical thing that's getting it, but he's realizing he's developing some sort of feelings for this person that he sees every, you know, he feels as he has some sort of ownership over it, whether or not he does. And then they make a joke about that. But let's talk about the jokes before I deconstruct the thing.
Well, I did just before we get into like the nitty gritty, like you're right that I do think this marks a turning point in the show and a turning point in his character, where for the next, like the last two seasons, a big part of it is going to be, okay, how long can you keep this up, Sam? Like this Lothario, this, you know, like the womanizer, you know, the everything that we kind of built you up. It's like, at some point, does it become ridiculous? Does it become hard to believe? Like a big deal, like how much he talks about his appearance throughout the life of the show. When she calls him, she's like, are you getting gray here? And he kind of like freaks out. He's like, hey, personal, too personal. I was like,
yeah, he's been talking about chicken skin on his arms. Okay, but not the hair.
Not the hair.
Into the specifics of this one, again, they started this whole new thing this season where a lot of the teasers are just these really short, like 30-second bits outside of the bar. Mm-hmm. They brought the cast. They're like, okay, let's shoot on the street in Boston and get all these little things. This one was a funny one because it also has one of our more famous, at least contemporaneously, political guest stars in terms of, it had former Massachusetts Governor Michael Dukakis, who had just left office, obviously, a few years prior to this. He had run for president of the United States on the Democratic ticket, lost to George H.W. Bush.
He was taller. But H.W. Bush was taller and whiter, according to Saturday Night Live. That's
right. So showing my age, obviously, born in the early 80s, I remember that election in 88 being like the first time I was aware of a presidential election and what was going on and the people involved in the stakes. And I just remember like waking up that day and like, oh yeah, my parents voted for Dukakis and he lost. And I'm like, oh, that's something that happens. You can vote for somebody and they lose. I'm like,
yeah. Life lessons.
I had gotten used to that 4 years previous with Walter Mondale, but this was that.
Oh, you were the one who voted for him.
Yeah, no, I was too young. That was the problem. It was voter fraud in Minnesota. We've heard all about it, but oh gosh, that was an election I remember. That was also I remember it from the primaries all the way through because I was old enough to be really into Saturday Night Live at the time, which was a great era, and they did a lot. He had Al Franken on the writing staff, so he was doing some great stuff. Like Michael Dukakis was a space alien who had been sent here to take over, and with his people wanted to use death rays and lasers, but he wanted to do, you know, simple folksy understanding of the issues.
There was also a Gary Shandling show episode that I remember because for some reason we had it on tape. So I watched it all the time, but it's Gary Shandling show did a whole like live election night coverage special. And the whole thing was he had all of these little games and tests and everything to show to predict who the winner would be. And everyone said Dukakis. Every game he played said the winner was Dukakis. And he's like, it's like 7 o'clock at night, prime time. He's like, I'm calling it. It's Dukakis. He won. Congratulations to the next person. And like they start making fun of Bush and Barbara Bush at the time. Actually, the guy who plays Paul Crapence in Cheers was on Gary Shandling show, and I think he called Barbara Bush a fat ox. And then they make a big deal about like an actor plays the president of NBC, comes on the set of the show to yell at Gary Shandling for getting this wrong and screwing up. And he's like, and you call her a fat ox? What the hell's wrong with you? You can't say that. It's, so they, so yeah, so the it, bringing it back to Cheers, the whole thing is Norm and Sam are walking together and they just have to walk by, and Michael Dukakis is in front of the bar buying a newspaper from a vending machine. And they recognize them. It's Dukakis. And they're trying to decide, should they go up and approach him? Should they introduce themselves? Should they say hi? How should they refer to him? Mike? Michael? Governor? Well, ex-governor, really? Everything. And then they just decide, Duke. We'll call him Duke. And then while they're trying to figure this out, he just kind of walks by them and goes, hi, how you doing? And walks out of the studio.
Yeah.
Oh, we just met Michael Dukakis. We got to tell everybody about this. What do we say? Do we call him Mike or Michael or Governor? No, Duke. So, in the beginning of the episode, we see that Carla's watch alarm goes off. She rushes to the office to tell Sam or to give Sam a bottle of vitamin E. Just to explain this to Rebecca and everybody, it's Valentine's Day, and this is like, oh yeah, once a year he meets this woman named Lauren for one date. Sam comes out and asks Carly, he's like, how long have we had this bottle of vitamin E? And she's like, I don't know how long. And he dumps it out, and it's just all of it just congealed into one massive like rock of like pills.
There was a lot of physical comedy throughout the entirety of this, just little bits thrown in, and I wonder if somebody said, you know what, we're throwing all that in today. There was a fair amount in the show anyway, but it really was well handled today, especially when you're talking about props that you had to drop or spill and work with. Everybody seemed to be.
Rebecca thinks that this once a year date thing is silly. And Sam explains 20 years ago, he and Lauren went out to this cabin for the night and they spent a romantic and erotic night. And he's like, of course, you would think that's silly. And they're like, why is it, if you really like her, why do you only meet once a year? And he's like, I don't know. It was always her idea. I always meant to ask her, but I keep getting distracted. Like this year I'll do it. This year I'll pin her down and find out. No, I better not pin her down. I'll get distracted again.
Let me bring up the unfaithful elephant in the room. Is this to be implied that, you know, 20 years ago he was dating and engaged to Diane? At some point, are we to believe that he was like sneaking off on her
because on
Valentine's Day?
Yeah, it's obviously it's a retcon that does not work logically. Like he would, I don't think he would have done that, nor could he have done that during their relationship. So it's either playing fast and loose with the idea of every 20 years, and there were some times where he told Lauren, "Hey, not making it tonight," or whatever, or. Yeah, it's kind of just making this up, but yeah. He was also married for a time before the show even, which was still would have been within the time period of this 20-year gap. So
according to my math, if he's roughly the same age as Sam, or as Ted Danson, he's reached the ripe old age of 44 years old by this episode. Yeah, so even way before that, he would have been married, and well, I guess he wouldn't have been dating Captain Janeway on Valentine's Day because she dumped him after the election. So
was that before this? Have we already had Janeway on the show?
That was season 4.
Oh, I didn't. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
Yeah,
that was the story arc, the last 3 episodes of season 4. Yeah.
Okay. She's just great in everything she's in.
They think that Rebecca is just jealous because she doesn't have a date for Valentine's Day. And she's like, yes, she's seeing two wonderful gentlemen, Ben and Jerry. And Carla tries. She's like, you know what? Forget about Valentine's Day. It's a cheap, foolish holiday, you know, invented by, you know, whatever, like corporate, you know, to sell cards and candies and everything. He's like, don't let Valentine's Day be a big deal. She's like, if there's any reason to be depressed, that you're one day closer to death.
Yeah.
You work for $7 an hour.
Yeah.
And just Rebecca's like, thank you. And just kind of walks off even more depressed. She's like, hey, if it makes you feel any better, happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
You think she's depressed? How many years later is it? And what's minimum wage?
Oh, yeah.
She was doing pretty well as a waitress if she was making $7 an hour. Mm. There's no joke John cannot undercut.
Frazier comes out from the back room to order a couple of pitchers of beer for his the guys in the back. And Norm and Cliff are like, hey, what's this about? And Norm's like, if you're buying beers for all your friends, you know, aren't we friends? And Frazier's like, no, it's not. These aren't friends. It's a therapy group for men who have difficulty relating to women. Norm's like, well, set them up, Woody. And then Lilith comes in, flanked by a group of women. And she's like, oh, Frazier, there you are. She's like, where are the dysfunctional men?
Yeah. Yeah.
And this was almost my home run for the episode because the camera just lingers on Frazier and Norm.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know the joke that's coming.
Yeah.
You know exactly where this is going. She's like, where are the dysfunctional men? And it's like, look around you. And then it's actually Carla who's just like, throw a rock.
Yeah.
So Lilith leads these women to the pool room to meet the other men. She how does she describe? Make yourselves as comfortable as 5 women totally hostile to their own bodies.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, Lilith.
You know, I often wonder what, you know, their circle, the rest of like the psychiatric circle of Boston at the time were like, did you hear that the Cranes managed to find another way to bring their groups into that bar they always hang out at again?
Yeah.
we do get to briefly, not only is Frazier like a terrible psychiatrist, as we've learned and learned later over and over again, but apparently he was about a C student in medical school too.
Yeah. Niles is the one that has the...
Yeah, I'm glad they kept that with the whole thing. They've changed a bunch with it, but they kept the idea that no one really knows why you're successful, Frazier, but go.
See, I could have been a real doctor. Which is a joke that they definitely make on Frazier. They can also never decide what kind of psychiatrist they are, because Lilith in Frazier sometimes is a research psychiatrist, which is his mom was.
Right.
That's where they got their names, was from her lab rats in a very good episode of Frazier. But then other times she's seeing patients and she's a clinical psychiatrist.
Right.
So you don't know if it's because the writers don't know the difference or if just nobody's really paying attention.
This is the world of Cheers, the dark god of mischief running everything. The world where we do get to legally and ethically bring your research patients who have described throughout the thing as having possibly aggressive tendencies towards members of the opposite sex. Let's give them booze and put them together and then get mad that this doesn't work instantly.
Yeah, well, they also do like all the party games. Make those people horribly uncomfortable.
I've got some thoughts about those and we'll come back to them. When they explain this whole thing, it's like, yeah, Frazier got this group of men who can't relate to women. Lilith has a group of women, the same opposite problem. So let's bring them together in this like neutral setting. And as they're explaining this, all of the men come rushing out of the back room to see. They're like, Dr. Crane, did you, he's like, yes, I know there's girls back there. he's like, this is what we've been training for. Get back in there. Now it's the real deal. It's not just me in a wig.
That's right. It's not just me in a wig. Oh, that was almost my home run. Just get away.
Later on, Carla comes in from outside. She says that the stairs are really icy. She asks Woody to put some salt down. Norm says, yeah, these pretzels need some salt, too. Frasier walks back, and he's like, he's mentioning that his patients are hopeless. Again, great work there, Frasier. Great work.
Yeah.
Look like. Especially given, like, the patient confidentiality, but you're bringing them to the bar where all of your friends socialize, and now they know that these are your patients, or and you, they know what's wrong with these guys.
I think they've forgotten that it's strange that every aspect of their lives fall, you know, happened in this bar by this point.
Yeah.
People in the other psychs and shrinks in the bar go, do you know they had a bris in that bar?
Even Lilith's getting used to it at this point.
That's what I'm saying.
More natural in the bar than she was. She was a lot more awkward and kind of out of place, but not as much now.
Well, I think this is just about, if this is the Frasier and Lilith show, which is, this is one of my favorite episodes of it. This is the Frasier and Lilith show is about the slow descent into non-functional alcoholism that these two alcoholics fall into, because yet they never really show them drunk because you couldn't in this thing, but they're in the bar every day, every night in the afternoon. They always stop for a drink no matter where they're going.
Well, that's what Frasier's talking about in his first episode when he's on the radio talking about his life in Boston. Just consisted of, well, going to the same bar night after night, or at least every Thursday.
Hey, that's the show you were on before.
They've got a kid, too. A new kid.
Yeah, where's Freddy during this? Now he's probably with a nanny.
He goes to the same school as the kid from the Dick Van Dyke show.
Oh, the school for forgotten about children? Yeah.
He vanishes for episodes at a time.
Probably for the best season.
We see some a flash of insight from Woody here, because Woody says, you know, Dr. Crane, give the guys a break. You know, maybe therapy isn't the right thing. He's like, the way he was brought up when you have problems. You just keep forcing it down. You bottle it up in a secret, dark place inside. And even when it feels like it's about to erupt and burst out, you just keep forcing it down. He's like, and he just kind of walks away. He's like, what do you think? And Frasier's like, it's very nice advice, Woody. And then Frasier just to Norm, tick, tick, tick. And there's this real genuine kind of smile and laugh from Norm that I think is really just George Wendt laughing at the line.
Oh.
Like that's a little bit of the actor just coming out. Like, that's hilarious. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sam comes out of the office. He is ready for his 20th anniversary date. The guy's given a military style send off or some sort of ceremonial thing. They're throwing pretzels like rice or confetti, playing music. Sam walks up the stairs, slips, falls down the stairs, and we actually see through the window him like rolling down on his back, like sliding down. And they open the door and his feet just like flop into the just lying on the ground in pain. Carla's like, Woody, you didn't salt the steps, did you? He's like, I'll get around to it. We come back from the commercial and here's that moment I love. Sam is on one of the front tables, kind of laying out, and Frasier and Lilith are there, and Frasier is like checking his back, doing like his whole lumbar area and trying to do like some kind of diagnosis. He's like, does it hurt when I do this? And it just does something. And Sam like seizes, almost convulses in pain. He's like, that's good. That's good. He's like, what? That means I'm going to get better? He's like, no, that means I know what I'm talking about. You see, Lilith, I could so have been a real doctor.
Yeah, there it is, yeah.
Sam gets up. He's still going to go on this date against the doctor's advice and against common sense. But he asks Woody to help him up to his car and then help him drive to Vermont and then help him get in the cabin. And Woody's like, what's in it for me? And he's like, you can use the new gas card to fill up the tank. He's like, woo. Like, I'll feel so grown up. It's like, yeah, Woody can also pay for the trip too, apparently. So we get this brief little moment, like a kind of interesting scene inside the car where Sam is kind of sitting in the passenger seat, clearly pain, and Woody has to buckle him up and narrate everything he does, from adjusting the window to checking the rearview mirrors, all of these things, buckling up. And then once they pull out into traffic, he's going to mention every stop that they pass, every street sign, every interchange. And the one thing I will give them credit for, the writers at least looked at a map, because the navigation that he's passing of those streets is accurate. So back at the bar, Frasier and Lilith try the trick where they've got, like, she has an orange under her chin, yes, under her chest, and they have to try and pass it to each other. Like this, my wife's school, they used to have these kind of like spring day competitions and fun games and stuff like that. And they used to have this kind of thing for the kids. Mm-hmm. And all of the teachers complained. They were like, this is, you should not do this. And the administration was like, it's fine. It's innocent. It's harmless. They're like, no, this is such a bad idea. Finally, mm-hmm, it took COVID and a global pandemic for the school to be like, we're not going to do this anymore. We're not going to have the kids, you know, basically neck with each other in a sponsored, you know, after school event.
Yeah.
That said, Kelsey Grammer and Bebe Neuwirth did an absolutely hilarious bit that kind of summed up everything you just said of everybody's weird feelings about why do we do that? But there, doesn't that look fun?
So they try to get one of the patients to do it, and the guy's like, nope, I'm not going to do it. He runs off. Mm-hmm. And they're like, all right, well, we'll try a new trick. And they bring out the Twister game. They try out the Twister mat to throw it.
That's the other thing that sounds like a good idea, but just leads to Charlie horses.
Definitely does.
Back in the cabin, Woody helps Sam inside. Sam tells him to come back in the morning, and then they hear Lauren's car pulling up. Sam tells Woody that he has to sneak out the window so she doesn't see him.
Yeah.
This is not exactly the gratitude that Woody expected after driving him here. Sam's like, shut up and get out. He's like, that's much better. That'll keep me warm.
But then he comes back.
The physical.
He came back through the door? What was he?
There's a door right here. Why did I go out the window? And he's like, just leave. So Woody goes out the window. Oh, classic. Almost vaudevillian. Nice to have that.
Yeah.
Lauren walks in, and Lauren is played, or her character, Lauren Hudson, played by the actress Barbara Feldon, probably most famous for playing Agent 99 on Get Smart, but lots of other TV and movie credits going back to the 1960s. Interesting footnote that I noticed this one. Her first movie appearance, her debut, was in the movie Fitzwillie. And if you look at the way she looks in that movie, it's pretty clear that the creators of the Scooby-Doo cartoon based the character of Velma on how this woman looks in that movie.
Yep.
Same glasses, same hair, same color, like turtleneck sweater. Very interesting, yeah.
If I could remember which movie Daphne comes from, but that is true. There is specific movie stills that they just kind of reached and grabbed. That's what I think.
She comes in, happy Valentine's Day, Sam, and they're like going to embrace, but she's like, wait, I want to get a running start.
Yeah.
Cut to the outside of the cabin and Sam's screaming. Back at Cheers, Frasier and Lilith are now playing spin the bottle with their patients who refuse to play. And I gotta say, I'm with them on this one.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like, all sorts of things going on here in terms of like patient consent. Like, did they agree that they were going to go there and kiss a stranger as part of their therapy? Like, obviously it's a TV show. It's a sitcom, but really straining credulity at this point.
Yeah. And I was, Lilith's good at her job is the thing, but she's not in this episode.
Well, I think she was good at her job, but I think my theory that she's kind of going down and that's why
she's bringing her down to his level.
Eventually, she wigs out and goes and lives in a dome.
In the dome, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Frasier's clearly frustrated, and Lilith is like, you know what? This is our fault. We brought you here hoping that this would cure, but clearly you are not ready for this. And Frasier's like, no, he won't. He won't accept defeat. He won't accept failure. It's not that hard to kiss somebody. And he kisses Lilith, and then he's like, see, I'll do it again. He kisses her again, and then again, and then they're caught up, and they just embrace a hot, passionate kiss for a couple seconds.
Yeah.
Look around awkwardly at the rest of the group that's just staring at them. They're like, class dismissed. And the two, he picks her up and they carry them off. It's like,
yeah.
All right. Because it helped Frasier and Lilith.
Lovely. They're very strange. Frasier and Lilith on Cheers are very weird.
I love them.
I don't mean that in a bad way. Yeah, no, not at all. There's just their little subplots tend to be kind of odd. Which I guess compared to the rest of them is my point.
I've said it before. I love the Frasier Lilith show.
Yeah.
It's, I, I, really think by this point, because they, I don't know how, where they were in renewing contracts or anything, but clearly they must have either had a really good idea that they were going to do a Frasier show, or they were that, and they either kind of feeling that out between Woody and Frasier and Lilith, because there's a lot of, this would be kind of the prototypical plot of what you would want the Frasier-Lilith show to be. It would be about the two of them either competing with each other at this sort of thing, or trying to show off. There probably would be, you know, some sort of board waiting to show in, and things would go comically wrong. That's that I like. But it's really funny to look at it based on actual psychology, because all the weird ethics, lack of consent, and terrible stuff about it aside, they could have stated in real life that they made incredible progress, because they got them to be that close to each other for that long of a period of time. And at least
they showed up,
mimic the activities of being in a social environment. That would be huge. That would take months, if not years, of therapy for people in their condition to be able to do so.
Well, and some people,
kudos really, cranes.
Yeah. Some people really do support the idea of exposure therapy. Exposure therapy comes up a lot more in Frasier, too. He uses it with his patients when he starts doing, like, private practice stuff later on in the show. Exposing yourself to the thing that you're afraid of is a good way to get over it sometimes.
It must have been the only week he went to school outside of a binge, you know. I'm sticking with my theory.
Back at the cabin, Sam and Lauren are in bed. He is clearly in pain, but she wants to dance. She pulls him up to dance with her, which she yelps at. And he's like, how about we do that new dance that's sweeping Boston? He's like, how does it go? Like, well, the guy stands very still. And sometimes he leans on something for support. And sometimes his knees start to wobble. He's like, you mean like yours? He's like, yeah, see, like this. And he just tries to snap. And he's like hunched over like this.
Yeah.
She starts getting self-conscious about this. She's like, what is going on? And he's like, it's nothing. It's fine. And she's like, all right, you don't find me attractive anymore. That's why you're not into this. And he's like, no. And he kind of, that's when I think, to his credit, I think that's when Sam realizes if he's hurting her, he's got to come clean. Like, that's where he's like, look, I put up a show as enough, but like, if that's really what you think, that I'm not into you anymore, I fell down the stairs. I'm in excruciating pain. I can't cover this up anymore.
Yeah,
I agree with you. I and that's why it's one of the reasons I think it really represents a growth moment for Sam, or the sign of it, because this is a man we've seen will maintain the lie forever, no matter how it's collapsing apart and stuff. But at this point, he realizes that someone that he cares about is being hurt.
Right.
And he drops all the pretense in a second and becomes completely vulnerable in a way we've never seen him really do, besides maybe Rebecca, the night when they were like had to spend night together. There's been a few times that he's been able to, but this is the most open we've ever seen him about anything like that. And then as it goes on to the next scene, while they're talking about their appearance and such.
Yeah. I think it's probably the most mature we've seen Sam.
Yeah. And I like that, as you mentioned, like, this is the most vulnerable that he's been in expressing like this level. And she completely gets him back with, I'm not surprised, a man of your age.
Man of your age.
That was great. I loved her for that.
Back at the bar really quick, Carla gets a $5 tip inside a Valentine card from the patron with hairy knuckles. And she starts she starts folding up the bill and like brushing hair. And she starts making fun of Rebecca for not getting a Valentine. And then Cliff has this moment, because it's just there, he's the only one there in earshot, and Cliff gives, he's like, nobody's gonna spend Valentine's Day alone if I can help it. And he had this car for Ma, but Rebecca needs it more, so he gives Rebecca the card, doesn't want to see her sad on Valentine's Day, and because she needs a pick-me-up. So she's happy and she shouts it to Carla. And then Maggie, your favorite moment, Cliff gets up and kind of like, so what am I going to get in return? She's like, what do you mean? He's like, and yes, the behavior, the expectation of some kind of physical response to doing something nice, it's reprehensible. It's terrible. but it's just also so clumsy and stupid coming from Cliff.
Yeah.
You can't take it because he's like, come on, baby, swing a little. Like, it's
yeah, so right. Yeah.
It's like, he's like, Robin's gone. Sam's out of the picture. You had the rest. Now try the best. It's kind of like Cliff when he took Diane to the postman's ball or something like that in one of the early
seasons. Oh, my God.
And Carla convinced Cliff that Diane was into him. So when Cliff gets this confidence, he really takes it too far to this extreme and doesn't know where the line is. But it's kind of like really kind of just almost more pathetic and revealing of how dumb he can be.
Well, true, but he was also has been listening to Frasier and Lilith all night give stupid advice about how to interact with the people of the opposite sex. He's just doing what they told him to do.
Yeah, he's like,
he should
like,
have been in that men's group. Sure.
Yeah, he's like, Frasier said, you know, women like assertive men. So so he gives a and Rebecca like turns her back like she's like so stupid. But then I think she has this moment of genuine like, okay.
Oh, this poor guy.
As sad and lonely and pathetic as Cliff is, in his heart, he wanted to make her feel better. Mm-hmm. And he saw that she was hurting and gave her a Valentine card when nobody else would. And for that, give him a kiss. Give him something just to, as just a small kindness to him. And he is paralyzed. His mouth cannot form the words when he says, thank you. And Norm comes out. He's like, Cliff, hey, what's going on? And like, just frozen, like Norm's waving his hand in front of Cliff's face, trying to snap his fingers, not getting any reaction. And that's what he does. Is he just dumps Cliff's beer into Norm's own cup.
Yeah.
And goes back. And Cliff just still frozen there. Thank you.
And when they close the bar, they just decide to leave him there.
Yeah.
We've seen this before. He's going to be like this until at least 9:30 tomorrow morning. We'll just...
Maggie, how did you feel about Rebecca actually giving him the kiss? Did you think that was earned, justified, irresponsible, just bad writing? Like, what was your honest take on that?
I'm so glad you asked.
I can tell you wanted to say something.
Unpopular opinion. Yeah. I don't like that she did it. Okay. I think that it supports the idea that if you're weird and creepy and you do a nice thing for a woman, she might give you some kind of sexual favor. I think if she had given him a kiss on the cheek, which is actually what I was expecting, that would have been fine. But like a full-on kiss on the lips, I thought was way too much. But again, I come from the prudish times of the 1990s. I don't know.
Counterpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, he's clearly not displaying behavior that the audience is supposed to admire.
Right.
Number two, even though he gets his reward, he immediately gets his comeuppance and punishment for said thing. And the message of the entire thing was the only reason that he got it was entirely her decision.
Yeah.
He didn't force it. He didn't do it because she was. She sold the entire thing of that. Point B, this is a hilarious bit of Rebecca's nice little healthy way of getting over her bizarre breakup situation in compulsive eating and drink and binge drinking for a while. So she's going to be really fun for a little bit. And this is consistent with just her general kind of impulsive behavior. She'll do it at any point.
Well, counterpoint though, you're not supposed to want to emulate any of the characters in the show.
Exactly.
And yet everyone wanted to be Sam Malone. So that's what I'm thinking when you've got situations like that. There aren't people who are going to interpret that as, oh, what a weird, gross thing to do. Mm. And be like, oh, maybe that'll work for me and take it and run with it. You never know.
I think the point is valid and I would not argue against it. What you're saying, Maggie, I think John, like you bring up the extra point, like she's not pressured into doing this in any way. She's not bullied or threatened. Like, I think like, the difference between her walking away and being like stupid Cliff and her actually giving the kiss was just her consideration of I don't like the way this sounds, but almost an idea of his heart being in the right place in terms of like the gift he was trying to give her.
Well, and then she gets to have the moment where she runs to the bag. See, Carla, I did get one.
Yeah, that would be too.
Yeah, she wasn't pressured into it. He was trying to encourage her to do it and try to persuade her to do it. But I don't think under any circumstances would Rebecca take crap from Cliff. I think she can handle her own against him.
Plus, you got to remember, too, these are characters with a long series of history, interactions, stuff that the audience comes to with expectations and things like that. If this were a one-act play and we'd never met these two before and they did that, I'd be far more likely to be on your side, on your point of view on whether or not the unfolding of it. But I think that's pretty consistent with these two characters, and I think it turned out exactly the way that you'd think it was, and I thought it was pretty funny.
We go back to the cabin one more time, Sam and Lauren, and I love this, because they're just like, the sun has come up, they don't even realize, they've just been talking, but they're sitting down together. He's actually massaging her feet, and they're just kind of talking about their bodies. Like, she's losing her vision. It used to be 20/20. Like, Sam complains, talking about, like, he had a gallstone or a kidney stone or something in the past when he was going in.
He said he had, like, a kidney stone the size of a golf ball or something.
Yeah, yeah.
That would have been horribly painful.
Yeah, they're talking about being on a bran diet, and he's like, the worst thing is, like, when you get that skin under your arm, that just kind of, like, flabby skin, like a turkey waddle. And she's like, I thought only women get that. He's like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I will point out, though, that when he's rubbing her feet, I think she has her boots on. She's got some kind of, like, black, shiny... looked like she was wearing black patent shiny boots while he was rubbing her feet. And I'm like, wait, are those socks? What am I missing here? I don't know. I couldn't...
Agent 99 can do whatever she wants.
See, I don't know what that is.
We'll have to find some Get Smart. Co-written or co-produced by, created by Mel Brooks.
Oh, yeah? I like Mel Brooks.
And then, that's when she's walking behind him. She's like, is your hair turning gray? And he's like, come on, that's kind of personal.
That's crossing a line.
Especially with the line when she says, I thought only women got that. It kind of represents a big point of something, and a big point about, as the sociologists call it, the gendered construction of aging. We have certain expectations as we age, broad strokes, especially in this era, it was men were given a lot more leeway with how we're allowed to, age, where we don't gray, we silver, get wrinkled, we look striking, all of this stuff, every single thing, that women go through, and any given physical sign of aging that women go through are both known, have some sort of diagnosis and solution for and everything. Him just mentioning that the chicken flap, That's an admission at a level of just stupid aging thing that happens to all of us. That's both harmless, and the only reason that we even notice it is because it reminds us that we're no longer an aesthetically pleasing 20-year-old. That's sexism batting to the top of the order again, and finally the aging goblin hitting us and making it realize. Age is an issue with all of us to deal with in our own way, and we can create whatever sort of fantasies about it, and we can say our aging is this, your aging is that, or I'm aging well and all these things. But what it comes down to, we will age. We will move on to different points in our lives in which suddenly the things we thought were important or necessary in our 20s are not viable or valid. And eventually you come around to realizing that's okay, because it's true of everybody. This was one of the most honest conversations, however brief, about that sort of thing, especially for the time. I remember Mom really appreciating it there and pointing it out too. But it's very interesting, especially that you do not get very many examples of men being vulnerable about how we feel about the physical decline that we
have. Well, and especially I think for Sam, because Sam was an athlete.
Yeah.
He probably took quite a bit of pride in his body and how fit he was, especially when he was, playing for the Boston Red Sox. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine, we often think of it as being shallow, the phrase fragile male ego a lot. But that, it's not an invalid way to feel, to be self-conscious about how you are aging. It's something that every human being goes through, unless you're Benjamin Button.
And that's it. But that was his entire identity up to this point, basically.
And he's having to face that his body is changing, and it's never going to be like it was when he was in his 20s. And that's really hard for him.
to the difference between the way men age and the way women age, John, that you brought, it reminds me of something that I heard. The way society kind of represents it, the way people internalize it, might have an actual physiological component to it, mm-hmm. and an idea that maybe men stay attractive longer, and part of that is because men are sexually viable and capable of reproducing to a longer point in their life than women are. And this talk that I kind of heard was this guy was saying how there are three species on Earth that experience menopause in the female part of the population. It's humans, orcas, what they used to call killer whales, and elephants. Three animal species that are considered the smartest species on the planet, or among them. And these are the only three species where, like with every other species, like when the woman can no longer procreate or create life, reproduce for the species, she tends not to live much longer after that. Mm. But with humans, with whales, and with elephants, an entire third or half of their life might be after that. And what is the evolutionary reason for that? It's because, well, according to the studies and this research, it's because like evolutionary, biologically, there is an idea that women have things to pass on to the species that goes beyond just creating life. There's experiences, there's wisdom, and they call this the wisdom of the grandmother. That kind of like translates to these are things that have benefit. Whereas when men can no longer create new life, we tend to die within 10 years or so. It's like the wisdom of the grandfather, not that important to the proliferation of the species. So.
There's a ton of social and literary parallels of that. Even in the Bible, the idea of grandmotherly wisdom is so predominant that whenever many times in Psalms and Proverbs, if they're referring to God's wisdom, God is depicted as female in the moment referring to right. the wisdom from the Greek, because wisdom is
Sophia.
Sophia means wisdom. The name means wisdom. It carries over through three languages in the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And that's really interesting because it makes you wonder. It's been very old. The idea that old women are wise and old men better find something to do, otherwise they get out of the way, is pretty old net in that thing. And you got to wonder if there is a biological component to it, or at what point in our social development we all decided that's look at how that's happening. Look at us. Talking about smart stuff. That's what you get when you got teachers on your thing.
Coming back, Lauren says that she has to go. The time is up. He's like, wait, they didn't even sleep with each other. And so he's like, can we arrange something else? You know, like the next time you're done. She's like, no, this is only a one day thing, once a year thing. And she says, besides, I have to get to Portland for President's Day. There's a linebacker I always see there. Which, for one thing, I think it's funny because it's another athlete, but I think it's also funny because the character of Sam Malone was originally written to be an ex-football player and was going to be like a linebacker or something. And then when they cast Ted Danson, they're like, he doesn't have a football player's body. Let's make him something else. But then he's like, wait a minute. You see another guy like every President's Day? She's like, well, you see other women, right? He's like, yeah, but not once a year.
Yeah,
once a
year.
He's offended by that. Like that's the kind of like fidelity that he was like. He was like, that's borderline cheating for him. It's like there's mm-hmm. like a meaning to this. Like she's special for him, and that kind of goes back to what Norm was saying. But she, you know, she gives him a kiss. She's like, you know, we'll do something. She's like, I could arrange to see you on Arbor Day, and he's like, well, you don't see anybody else that day. She's like, I did, but he died. Oh. How did he die? And she's like, happy. Just kind of leaving the implication there. And then, yeah, like just the final like little denouement. We cut away back to Cheers for five more seconds. Lights are off. Stools are put up on the bar. Bar is closed. And we just pan across and we see Cliff still in the same position, still going, thank you. There are a couple of like sweet moments about this that I like, and some character things. There's some ridiculousness and absurdity, but overall, it's not the funniest one. But I've always liked this one as a milestone for Sam, in kind of seeing a growth aspect of his character. And an aspect of him that we haven't seen, but also maybe a peek into like, how is he when he's with women on these dates when they're not fooling around? Like, what is he just like after the moment is over? Like, how do they socialize? And I think it's like, yeah, there's humanity there that they like. And yeah.
And ultimately at the end, he, as part of his growth, he winds up getting fully treated like he treats women and having this explained to him. Well, I can't be with you then. I got to be with this other person then. This is true. But not once a year.
Really quick, the three of the guys in Frasier's group had dialogues that get credits. There's a guy named Jules, played by Roger Eschbacher. He was a TV writer, lots of kids' cartoons like Scooby-Doo stuff, one-off appearances, some minor roles on good shows. And then there was a guy named Adam, played by Gibby Brand. Lots of TV work. Edward, played by Dan Took. Lots of like small TV stuff, but like nothing really major. Yeah,
we recognized him. He was, well, that's a that guy.
Yeah, one of them, as like you recognize him from stuff. But for Norm's tab, Norm had 4 beers this episode, counting Cliff's that he stole. Which brings him up to 906 for the series so far.
Woo.
Maggie, who is your MVP or your employee of the week?
I'm going to give it to the gal that Sam's going to see, that Sam sees. I liked her. I thought she was cool. Yeah. I thought that she was very like confident in herself and was part of this big moment for Sam and his kind of maturity and us seeing a different side to him that we don't really get to see. And she was the instigator for that. Plus just, you know, well, a man of your age. I really liked her. I thought she was a really cool character. So I'll give it to her.
She was good.
Honorable mention to Woody in this one, just because of his bizarre, almost mean streak. And then just Woodying his way through life while everyone else is, you know, being nuts around him. But Ted Danson really went to town with the physical comedy on this one, as far as, you know, his character moves has men and it has already become way more than just the womanizer, but there's a lot more physical stuff that they do, especially with the ensemble cast when they don't have stuff for, you know, everybody to do. And enough time, Sam's going to be just a background character, but he's always been really good at picking movements and stuff in terms of drinking things and passing. And in this one, just the choices that he makes in terms of facial expressions, where he looks, just my favorite is when she rolls over him.
Yeah.
It's that silent bit of agony that he just kind of does it.
If you've ever put your back out, you know.
And the way he moves and all of that.
Yeah, Sam would be mine. I think Frasier and Lilith almost like, I couldn't choose one or the other, so they're kind of like reduced from being like a runner up. I did have Lauren as a runner up too, but yeah, I give it to Sam ultimately. For the home run, for like the best moment, it's not a gag, but it's actually just the scene of him rubbing her feet or her boots, whatever that actually was. But just that moment of simple kind of intimacy between two people at this point in their lives having actual conversations. I thought that was something different that we haven't seen. So
I've got 2. I've been trying to reduce it to 1, but I cannot. 1 because it's short. It's Ted Danson and all Sam and all of his glory come in near death and in pain. Go, ooh, this place is going to see some action tonight as he is shuffling forward like an 85-year-old man.
Yes, I forgot that one.
The other one, because it probably defined my sarcastic delivery for so long after I heard it, it was like, oh, what he says, are you going to read all of the signs out loud? Oh, I suppose you want me to break the speed limit. I wouldn't mind if you approached it. Yeah. I just kind of like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Sam was pretty great in that one.
John took mine. He did mine as his runner up. But I liked it when Sam came in and was hobbling and said, oh, yeah, this place is going to see. That really made me laugh when we were watching the episode. So that was what I was going to give.
But I had to say, I still remember my mom just cackling at that with him coming in because she had already been built. She had a way. If it farces anything that was building up to something. She was all in. And she had already been just giggling in a high-pitched whining bit during the Woody bit in the car. Mm-hmm. And then when she fell out of when he fell out of the car and all of that. Built. Right.
Yeah, I like those. I also like the when Lilith just says, where are the dysfunctional men? just the Mona hanging on that. And then Carla's like, throw a rock. Thank you, John and Maggie, for coming on Cheers Cast again. Where can people hear more from you if they want to hear more from you?
Regularly, the best place to hear us is once a month. We are on the Long Box Crusade doing Transformers Chronicles with Pat and Delvin.
Hi, Delvin.
We will hopefully be starting some new stuff soon. I know I'm going to cheat and re-release some old stuff, but just for fun, and then we might do some director's cuts on that and anything. But we're married with content. Who the heck knows what the heck our topic, content, or anything like that? We've had our really weird real life, and we only occasionally update. Yeah. If that interests you, it's just married with content on your listening devices will do it, your podcatchers. Otherwise, married with comic or married with content or married W content or MWC podcasts are usually the place to find us. MarriedWContent at gmail.com will send you emails. You can get email updates off of your favorite podcast place, all that stuff.
Thanks to all of you who listen to Cheerscast and support the show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. Cheerscast is supported by the Right On Network and Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of Power Pack. Go to patreon.com/FW Podcast to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks everyone for listening, and until next time, we're closed.
Now, you know the worst thing about old age is when you get so old that the skin under your arm starts getting loose and hanging like turkey waddle.
I thought that only happened to women.
Yeah, that's what I meant. I hate to see it, that's all.
Has your doctor put you on a brand diet?
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Last year was the worst. You know, I went in for this stomach problem. Turned out I had a stone the size of a golf ball. It took me a month to pass it.
Sam, has your hair started turning gray?
Hey, man, you're getting a little personal there, aren't you?